We are in week four. This is our final week in the book of Philippians. Philippians was a letter, the Apostle Paul, who's the leader of the first century church, that he wrote to a church in Philippi. We've got a map here for those of you that love maps, and especially if you've not been here, that's where Philippi is at, right? It was a Roman colony in Macedonia, and Paul wrote this letter about around 61 AD, about 10 years after he and his team had gone and planted a church in Philippi. And got to spend some time in jail until they had a worship service. If you're familiar with the story, you can read that in Acts chapter 16. Well, Paul is in jail again for the cause of Christ in Rome, and he's writing this letter back to this church, which he often did. And he wanted to thank them for partnering with him in ministry, which was really the theme of the letter. But we're going to get to a couple things as we have the last few weeks that he wanted to encourage them about and teach them about. But here's a question that I want to ask you, okay, to get started, all right? Are you a grass is greener person?
Yeah.
No. You thought I was getting to say, is the glass half full, right? You said yes before you listened to the whole question. All right. I'm going to deduct 10 points for that. Okay. Are you a grass is greener person? Do you have a little bit of wanderlust? Okay. Nobody. Okay. Preaching to me today. Thank you, Brother Nick. We're formal this morning. You ever watch travel shows or even House Hunters International and you're like, why do I live where I live? And that's not an insult to South Dakota. I felt that everywhere that I've lived, I'm like, why aren't I living there? You know, like where's that mountain cabin on a lake been all my life, right? Or on the beach somewhere, just somewhere else, okay? So I almost phrased this question, are you a thrill seeker? But I don't think that quite fits, right? I got a little bit of that going on, all right? I wanted to be a skydiving youth pastor in college and I did both, but not at the same time and not as far as I wanted to. But, okay, are you grass is greener? Probably not here, but have you known? Let's talk about other people. Sometimes that's easier, right? We don't like to talk about ourselves. Let's not be too transparent. But have you known someone, right? College students, we'll bring your students in. Because this never happens with adults. People that jump in and out of relationships all the time. Like you can't even keep up, right? You got to have a spreadsheet for your friends, girlfriends, you know. Okay, you guys are afraid to admit this. Okay, some of you probably did this too. I won't guess what guys it was. How about someone that's always changing jobs, like there's always a better job, right? Every year, year and a half, there's gotta be a better job. It's gotta be better over there. A grass is greener person, okay? And so I think we have the idea, I think we have the picture, and I will do my best to make it make sense at some point this morning, all right? That's my promise to you. That is my pledge. At some point I will try to make all of this make sense. And that's really my goal every Sunday morning, all right? But it's a moving target, so. So we're going to jump in here. We're in the fourth chapter of the book of Philippians, okay? But as common with biblical writers, even first century teachers or philosophers, when you're writing letters to those that you're teaching, or in Paul's case, a church that he established and fellow followers of Jesus, okay? Sometimes it's a little bit scattered. Sometimes it's scattered thoughts, all right? I used to do, you guys can't handle it, so because I love you guys, in youth ministry, I used to just sometimes, like, the message was just called scattered thoughts. You know, every now and then, like, here it is. Okay, it sort of looked like an epistle of Paul where he's hitting a bunch of different things, okay? And you're like, that's every week. You don't even know it. Thank you, Mark, for your encouraging laugh. Would you laugh with me, not at me, please? Thank you, Professor. So Paul's doing this here, and he's kind of hit several things. And so here at the end, which is common to these letters, and if you're familiar with any of the letters of Paul, kind of at the end, it just seems like a little bit of scattered thoughts. And he's got a little bit of that going on in chapter 4 as he's also trying to kind of land the plane of this letter. But we're going to try to make sense out of some of this. And I think there's some things that a couple of his points have in common that we're going to look at this morning, okay? But here at the beginning, he's going to kind of circle back to this concept that has kind of floated through the book of Philippians, all right? If you'd ask somebody what's the theme of Philippians, a lot of people would say joy, and they're not necessarily wrong. But there's another one that's kind of floating through here. It's about, and Paul labels them, citizens of heaven. You guys remember, especially in part 2, we talked about that a little bit more, okay? Citizens of heaven, and he's kind of circling back to this concept of if we are the people of God, it should look a certain way. There should be some things that show up in the church. If we're people of God, if we're citizens of heaven. And he's going to kind of hit this briefly here. We're going to spend a little bit of time with this. Most of this we covered in part 2, this concept of citizens of heaven. But here Paul hints at some conflict that we sort of saw him hinting at it earlier. But here verse 1 of Philippians chapter 4, he begins talking about unity in the church. And if you remember, we hit unity already in part two. We're going to hit it again a little bit because Paul himself kind of circles back here. It says, okay, verse 1, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Dear Lord, help me today. This goes faster if you guys respond. Get sidetracked. All right, verse 1. Here we go. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, you whom I love and long for, my joy and my crown. If you guys get a Christmas card from me, I'm probably not going to sound like that, okay? Just so you know, those are some great words, but probably, the Blairs, you're my joy and my crown. Like, I can't take credit for you, any of you guys, so. But Paul, we see this affection that he has for the church because he helped establish the church, help establish these people in the faith. And so it's like kind of like a father figure, right? He's a father in the faith, regardless of any age difference there. And we see his love for the people there. He says, my joy and my crown, stand firm in the Lord this way, dear friends. I plead with Euodia and I plead with Syntyche and to be of the same mind in the Lord. I know somebody here has a new pet. And I think pets should always be named biblical names. Here's a couple winners right here for you if you don't have a name yet. Euodia and Syntyche. Now, I told myself not to tell this story because it really has nothing to do with anything. But here we go. Okay, you guys ready?
We're ready.
Okay. Where is Kay when I need her this morning? Holy cow. My own little cheering section. So the Assemblies of God has a program. When I was growing up, it was mostly for teenagers, but it was also for children, called Bible Quiz. And if you're not familiar with that, it's pretty self-explanatory. They ask you questions about the Bible, and you have to answer them. But they always designate each year a book or small books. And so when I started, they were doing Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, and Colossians. And one of the questions was this verse. And you get extra points, is it 30 points, for quotation questions. You got to quote the verse, all right? And I'm being honest with you, a lot of pastors would try to make this make sense. This doesn't make sense. I'm just telling you a story, okay? I'm like in seventh grade, and I'm like quizzing out almost every time because I hadn't lost interest yet because sometimes I'm a grass is greener person, to be honest with you. This is not a resignation message. I know I just made half of you nervous or half of you excited. I don't know which, but. So I get to this verse, and you know how I knew how to pronounce that today? Because I listened on the Bible app like two or three times. Like, how in the world is Syntyche? You know, like, Mary, like, what do you? So I get to this verse, and I'm quoting this verse, and I get to this name, and I just spell it, and I quote the rest of the verse. And so, for those of you who aren't familiar with that, you've got, I believe, three judges sitting there judging your answers, okay? Because in kids' Bible quiz, there are specific answers the kids memorize, but you get to teen, like, it's a little more subjective sometimes. And I'm sitting there, and you see them pause and this look on their face, which is a look that I get often, and I'm getting it right now, too. They gave me the points for that question, because like I quoted it all correctly, and I spelled Syntyche correctly. At least that's what the British guy in my phone app says, is how you pronounce it. And so there we go. A little fun story with Uncle Jason, all right? Say, Jason... Yeah, never mind. I better go on. All right. So here, sometimes Paul digresses in his letters. So, you know, I'm just trying to be like Paul. So here in this verse, Paul points out a conflict he kind of hinted at earlier, all right, with these ladies. Okay, we're going to see the ladies in just a minute because he says that, right? But he's calling them to unity because as people of God, as citizens of heaven, unity in the church is very important. All right, so we see Paul here as he's kind of landing, painting, and closing. And I don't think this was a big kerfuffle. Right, that's a Hebrew word that means conflict. It's not Hebrew, just in case any of you believe me. All right, it's a little bit of conflict here, but he didn't really, when it's a serious conflict from Paul, you know it, right, from like 1 Corinthians or something. I mean, he's pretty obvious when there's a serious, serious conflict. So there's a conflict, but it wasn't so serious this whole letter was about it, because really this whole letter, the point was thanking them for partnering in ministry. But he did want to throw this in there of kind of, hey, as people of God, there needs to be unity in the church. So he calls out this conflict. He calls out this friction between these two ladies. And he encourages them to work it out for the sake of the church and be of the same mind. And so how important is unity in the church? This is the second time this has come up in this short letter that really wasn't about this. All right? I want to read a couple of verses because we need to know how important this is. All right? What does Jesus say about it? Hey, do you think Jesus has an opinion on unity? Okay, here's one of my favorite passages, okay? Matthew chapter 5, verse 23. He says, if any of you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Now, this passage has always been kind of curious to me. It's always kind of been a favorite. Number one, because I don't ever have conflict with anybody, so it doesn't apply to me. No, but you know what I find interesting about this passage? It's not addressing the person who's actually at fault. What it's saying is, listen, if I come before the Lord, and in a modern context, if I come before the Lord, whether I worship the Lord in singing, or I get ready to give in the offering, and the worship the Lord in giving, or even worship the Lord in serving, if I know Nick's got a problem with me, which sounds like Nick's the one that's got the problem, right? Yeah. Maybe he's unforgiving, maybe he's a little bit bitter at me, right? We'll get it worked out. But it says that I need to go and initiate reconciliation instead of Nick waiting on Nick to come to his senses and come apologize to me. Right? Now, I don't want to read too much in this verse. We don't get a lot of detail, but it says, if your brother or sister has something against you. Most of us would pray and pray and pray for the other person to forgive us and come to us. Right? Yeah. Which you should pray for reconciliation. You should pray for their heart to soften towards you. But I think our default is always to put it upon the person who is the one that we view in the wrong. But it says here, and again, the point here that I want you to see is Jesus was so concerned about unity between people who claim to follow Jesus, and Paul would put it, citizens of heaven, people of God. Jesus is saying, I would rather you wait to worship and thank me for my grace until you've been able to show that in relationship with somebody else. Well, that's a tough one, right? I could spend an hour on that right there. Right? And we see in other passages we're not going to get into on how to handle conflict or if somebody's been wrong, but what I want you to see is this is very important. It's very important to Paul. He's like, hey, ladies, we got to get this worked out, right? And by the way, it's written. I don't think it's a huge deal, but it's enough of a deal that he's got to address it. Does that make sense? Unity is important. It's important in the church because it should be reflected if we're people of God. And you notice here in Paul's writing and even in this passage from Jesus here, there's not an expectation that we will never have conflict. Yeah. And I think that's important. Okay? Why? Because we're still human. And yes, even if we've been born again, we're adopted into the family of God, and we're growing in the fruit of the Spirit, we're always growing, hopefully, but we never get to where they're on display perfectly. Okay? Which means there is always going to be conflict. But what sets apart the people of God or citizens of heaven should be how we handle that conflict. Does that make sense? Hopefully, as we grow in the Lord, as we mature in the Lord, hopefully there will be less conflict because we're people of grace. We walk in forgiveness towards one another. But Jesus here paints this picture of like, I would rather you not worship me in this moment, make things right, and then come back and offer your gift. Because when we worship, when we offer a gift, whether it's a gift of worship or praise or a monetary gift, we are doing that hopefully out of a heart of gratitude for what Jesus has done for us. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for your forgiveness, because I realize that I don't deserve it. But he wants us to show that same grace to other people before we thank him for the very same thing. Okay? Unity. It's important in the church. It's important to Jesus. Right? And Paul understood that, so he's encouraging that within the church. All right? Because when we can resolve conflict, that is grace lived out. Right? And sometimes it's not always possible. Paul, in another passage, we're not going to go there, says, as much as it depends on you, live in peace with one another. Okay? Because sometimes, okay, and maybe you've been there. Maybe sometimes just that, you know, it takes two to tango, but we at least have to do our part, okay, in reconciling and restoring that relationship. Verse 3 in Philippians chapter 4. Paul continues, says, "Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers whose names are in the book of life." And so what he's doing here, he's appealing to the church. It's possible he's writing to one person as a representative of the church under true companion. It's a little bit iffy. But it's clear that what he's asking for the church to help these ladies resolve their conflict. Right? Come alongside of them. Help them resolve this conflict. Okay? Help them. But he's reassuring their value and their worth like this. Hey, they're followers of Jesus. They have fought with me for the sake of the gospel. They've contended at my side. All right? So he's affirming and uplifting the ladies and their place in this church while he's asking the church, like, hey, let's help them move towards reconciliation. Whatever we can do, let's support them in that. Okay? So what we see here is a church hopefully growing in unity, helping one another, bringing reconciliation. This echoes something Paul wrote at the end of Galatians chapter 6, the first couple of verses. He said, "Brothers and sisters, if anyone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently." Right? How are we to restore them? Gently. Okay? "But watch yourselves." I like this. I like that there's a warning here. Okay? Paul is addressing potential pride, right? He says, "Watch yourselves, or you may also be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way we fulfill the law of Christ." See, what would happen if I see Sue sinning? I'm going to use Sue as an example, right? Because she's an infamous sinner in our church. If you're watching online, that's not true. All of you here know I'm just giving Sue a heart. She's safe. What would be tempting, possibly, is like if we're going to help Sue with a problem, is for me to come to Sue and act like I got it all together, right? And I'm perfect, and she's not. Like, she needs to get her act together, right? That's why I love this warning here. It says you got to restore them gently, but you got to watch yourselves or you might also be tempted, right? Not necessarily the same thing that she's doing, but be tempted to pride, okay? So restore gently because we recognize we're going to need that at some time too. We're going to need somebody to come alongside of us, whether it's in a conflict or a problem with sin, and help restore us, help walk with us in relationship. Okay, so that's the picture of unity Paul is painting here, all right? And just mentioned this little conflict, but he asked the others to come alongside and help because unity should be reflected in the church, right? We're not perfect on our own. That's not what he's asking to be reflected in the church. He's asking for unity. He's asking for reconciliation, for church to come together, to carry each other's burdens, all right? This is citizens of heaven in action, right? Verse 4, he continues, he said, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all, and the Lord is near." Now, I think if I'm remembering right, we used to sing a song like "Rejoice in the Lord always." Remember that? Yeah. See, there you go. Students, you've probably never heard that. Those of us that are older, you know, which is anybody over 12, right? We remember this song. And often if we look at this verse, it'd be really easy. We like to pull this first half out, okay? But think about the context that he's talking about. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and I say again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all." Like, what does that mean, right? We're all little puppy dogs or teddy bears in the Lord. What does that mean? And really these words here, if we were really to kind of flesh it out, and other translations say forbearance, but really if we could combine the two, gentle forbearance is probably the best way to explain this. He's still talking about putting up with people. Right? He just said, "Ladies, why can't we all get along? Hey, the rest of the church, let's help them." Okay? We're people of God. We should reflect forgiveness. We should reflect unity. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord," which seems kind of like a weird thing to put in the middle of here. "Let your gentle forbearance be evident to all. The Lord is near." And so we see here an encouragement to not forget to rejoice in the Lord. And I think what he's trying to do is, because this isn't some mild suggestion, he's trying to refocus and reframe the conversation here. Even in the midst of conflict, if we can rejoice in the Lord, it's going to help change our focus. It's going to make sure that our focus is where it needs to be, upon the Lord and upon His goodness. And Paul reminds us here that the Lord is near. Right? Why is that important? This really could be taken two ways. Scholars kind of don't necessarily agree on this. The Lord is near as far as His coming is soon, chronologically, or the Lord is near by His presence. And it could be very, very well that Paul's trying to communicate both because they're both true. Right? The Lord is near, which should help focus our minds on what is truly important. All right? The Lord is near. We should rejoice in that and rejoice in what He's done. If we can remember what He's done for us, we are much more likely to gently forbear with other people. Right? And church, we don't like to do that, do we? Okay? You guys are afraid to... Listen, I've been very transparent today. I'm going to be a little more transparent today. You know what one of my biggest weaknesses is? I have a hard time with stupid people. I don't like to gently forbear sometimes, right? I'm driving like, man, idiot. Okay? And that is pride in action, thinking I know how they should be driving. Right? I'll be honest with you. Right? Not like you got in the field and hit the GPS, Erlen, you don't have to worry about anybody else in your way. Right? We get gently forbear. And keep in mind here in Philippi, this was in Macedonia. It's a Roman colony. So this was a very small church with a very small Jewish population in this town. And so they are surrounded by pagan Gentiles who oppose what they're doing. And Paul didn't address any specific persecution necessarily, although he alluded to some in chapter 1 when we went over that. Okay? Saying the Lord is near and we need to... practice gentleness with other people and not just be evident to others in the church, but those outside the church. Okay? I'm going to spend an hour in point one, all right? Buckle up, I'm going to talk fast soon, okay? You guys think I'm talking fast now. But what a witness would it be to Vermilion if it wasn't that, oh, Cornerstone is still perfect, they always get along, right? Cornerstone, well, they just don't give up on each other. They are quick to forgive each other. They're quick to show grace to one another, right? Instead of people coming and going and complaining about other people, right? I think I told you when I tried out, you're going to have the opportunity to forgive me, okay? And I'm not, there's not like one person, you guys are like, what's he thinking about now? Nothing. Nothing's happened this week. This is a general example, okay? I've done it long enough. It happens, right? But what witness would it be to the world if we could put up with one another? And I know that sounds really unspiritual. But what a huge witness would that be to the world? Okay? We're going to go to another of Paul's letters. Okay? Colossians chapter 3, verse 13. He wrote this to another church. He said, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. Right? That's not our natural default. It's not always easy, but the command is clear from Jesus and from Paul. Like, listen, sometimes we got to put up with one another and forgive each other, right? You're never called to forgive someone who never wrongs you, right? Grass is always greener. It's easy to bail. You don't have the problem as much in this town, but where we grew up, I mean, there's more AG churches in the community than there are in this entire state of South Dakota. And the population of those churches was multiple times here. I mean, it was like a buffet. That was sort of how I described, some of you know this, how I described Springfield. If one, you know, on a buffet, you get the little platter, whatever they call it, okay? One gets cold, you go on to the next one. That's how a lot of people treat churches in Springfield. Not all of them, okay? I'm painting with a broad brush. Like, oh, that's it, they made me mad, I'm going to the next one. You'd find people that have been in most of the churches in town, but unsurprisingly, the problem seemed to follow them. Because they never learn to forgive. They never learn to bear with one another. All right? That's not something I necessarily see here. The choices are limited, right? A smaller town. But listen, it's not uncommon, church. Oh, they annoyed me. I'm leaving. Okay. Right? If everybody left that I annoyed, I'd have like, Amy would be, well, no, she'd be gone too. Okay, so I might have an empty room, right? But we learn to bear with one another. We learn to forgive as the Lord forgave us. All right? And back to Paul's reminder at the end of the first few verses we read, it says, the Lord is near, okay? And that is how, church, we should reframe and refocus forgiveness, okay? Unity. The Lord's coming, all right? Not just to judge us, but to complete our salvation. And that should be the focus of everything we do, which means sometimes little annoyances, we just forgive and get over, right? We forgive somebody who's harmed us. We go to someone who we know is upset at us, and we try to make it right. Okay? That's how important it is. And so Paul here, as he's closing this letter, begins to end with some encouragement. He's like, listen, guys, this is the Lord is coming. Let's reflect Him. Let's show the grace that He's given to us to other people, okay? And so he transitions really of talking about their relationship with one another to really their relationship with the Lord in these next handful of verses here, okay? He begins to speak about the peace of the Lord, okay? Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, he says, "Don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to the Lord." Okay? Present your request to God. And he frames how we are to come to the Lord, all right? Don't be anxious about anything. That's easy to say, right? Hey, don't worry, be happy, right? There's a famous philosopher, I believe, wrote that one time, right? Don't worry, be happy. It says, don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, come to the Lord, and again, with thanksgiving. This isn't just simply a thank you. This is a recognition, a deep recognition for what the Lord has done for us, right? Remember, Paul had already said, hey, the Lord is near. Trying to keep everything in focus, everything in priority. But we come with thanksgiving before the Lord. This is really about the attitude of our heart, okay? That we are thankful for the person and the work of Jesus that breeds generosity in us, okay? But we come with thankfulness and we present a request to the Lord, okay? And look what he says is going to happen. Verse 7. It says, "The peace of God, which transcends all understanding." Okay, other translations say the peace that passes all understanding. Okay, you guys want to go full on KJV, right? Probably say passeth. Am I correct? Because that may be the one you grew up with, you're familiar with. But he says, if we present a request to the Lord, it's the peace of God, which transcends all understanding. What will it do? Look at this picture he's painting. It'll guard your what? Guard your hearts and your minds. Man, what a powerful promise. Okay? In the first century, the first century world, what would a guard look like? I appreciate your response. I'll wait. You're worth the wait. Right, probably probably a Roman centurion or something like that would come to mind when he was writing this, right? Okay, we might think of guys with ARs and, you know, whatever. Because ARs... I was about to make a joke about assault rifles. Okay. It's probably a safe place. That doesn't stand for assault rifle, right? You guys know that. Okay. But we probably picture some type of, about said heavy machinery. That doesn't make any sense, right? But some type of weapons. But here, in their mind, probably some Roman centurion, right? Got a sword, got the shield. The peace of God guarding our hearts and our minds. How many of you need that sometimes, right? I know I do. Oh, I like to overanalyze life, right? And think about everything and in a circle several times. Okay. If we go to the Lord with our needs, if we go with an attitude of thanksgiving, Paul is telling the church here, like, listen, guys, if you do this, the peace of God will guard your hearts. He'll guard your mind. Okay? The importance of prayer, right? Peace, standing guard, a powerful picture. You guys, think about it. We'll guard our hearts and our minds, right? It's not a guarantee that we get what we want, right? But it's a guarantee that if we draw near to the Lord and we go to Him in prayer, that there's a supernatural assurance, no matter what is happening in our life, God can grant us a supernatural assurance. Not that we get what we want, but that He is there. Remember, Paul just said the Lord is near. Did I say super? Everybody say supernatural. You guys are ridiculous. I can't believe you said that. Right? Grant us a supernatural assurance that He is there. And it's going to be okay, not because He's guaranteeing us we get what we want here and now, but it's going to be okay because He's in the midst of the mess with us. Amen. All right? That's what the peace of God will do. That's what the peace of the Lord will do. It'll protect our hearts and our minds. Okay? It'll remind us of what we need to be reminded of. And usually just that's the Lord is with us. Paul just said the Lord is near. Right? It'll guard our hearts and our minds. And then he shifts to our thinking. So Paul has addressed their prayers with the peace of the Lord, and now he's going to shift to their thinking. Verse 8, he says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, Whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. What are you have learned or received from me? Just put it into practice. What you've learned, what you received, what you've heard, what you've seen, put it into practice, and the peace of God will be with you. And this is a matter of focus. He's addressed their prayers. He's addressed them coming to the Lord with everything, with thanksgiving, and told them what the peace of God would do. And now he's trying to address their minds. What are you thinking about? If they thought about how small and insignificant their church was, or how small the Jewish community was in Philippi, it'd be easy to get overwhelmed, right? If we think about all the reasons we have in this life, to maybe be upset or hurt, it'd be easy to get overwhelmed. If we think about the culture, how anti-God it's really becoming, it'd be easy to get overwhelmed. Like, oh, we're a small church in a small town. Okay, it'd be easy to go, Lord, what can we do for you? No matter where you find yourself, it's important what you focus on. And this is not a mind over matter thing. Paul is laying out principles here. Right? What do you dwell on? Listen, remember he started with God is near. If we dwell on the Lord's nearness, that's going to encourage us. Right? We dwell on what he's done for us, that's going to encourage us. Whatever we focus on, our lives will naturally drift that direction, or our attitudes will. Can I tell you, it happens all the time. There's times I just have to stop reading news for a while. Because I get into the mood that all people are idiots that don't think like I do. Right? I know none of you ever struggle with that, but sometimes I do, okay? Maybe we need a support group. Right? We can see all the sin in the world that is now not just being accepted but promoted, and we get a little overwhelmed, like, Lord, man, what hope is there for this world, for our country? Listen, we can become consumed with the wrong things, church. We need to be aware of what is happening. We don't need to bury our heads in the sand. Okay, we need to be aware, but we also need to beware of popular culture, news, everything that's happening, because it can overwhelm us if we focus on it too much. Sometimes I got to bail out of social media, right? Twitter was a cesspool. It just bailed out, right? I don't scroll Facebook a whole lot anymore, because then I'm like, what are those people doing? What are they thinking? You know, it's people you haven't seen in 20 years, right? And you're like, man, can't believe they're, you know, whatever. I'm glad none of you ever struggle with any of this either, right? But Paul's saying these are the things we need to think about. These are the things we need to focus on. It's not that we live in ignorance, but we've got to be consumed by God and his purposes, right? Proverbs 4:23 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. That's what Paul's talking about. He's talking about what they place their attention on, what they think about, what they focus on. As followers of Jesus, we have to guard our heart. Again, it's not living in ignorance, but sometimes we got to draw the line like, yep, that's enough of that for today, or that's enough of that for this week, right? Church, that's why it's important to be with one another, right? Because we should encourage one another when we're together, right? Wednesday nights, when during life groups, it's encouraging to hear what God is doing in people's lives, or just even the conversation we're having, okay? Students, if you're involved in small groups, stay connected to small groups through Chi Alpha. That encourages you, it strengthens you, to just even for the fact that you know, hey, somebody else is in this with me, yeah. Right? But guard your hearts, what you read, what you see. Listen, what you post about, guys? Okay. I don't know if I ever told this story here, right? Sometimes we can lean into the wrong thing. This was like 10 years ago. I wanted to start a snarky pastor thing on Twitter. Okay? I really did, because I had some good ones. I had some zingers. And I came up with a list, and I created the account. Now, I didn't know how to promote it, because I didn't want anybody to know that it was me. Okay, so admittedly, it did not get very far, right? But I had two or three dozen tweets already ready to go. Man, I created this document. But you know what happened in just a couple days? As I was leaning into the snarkiness, I'm like, man, my attitude is terrible. All right? Went from pointing out things that I thought was funny in ministry or in the church, right, to looking for any and everything that I could make fun of or that I thought was wrong. Like, wow, this is not going to lead me to a very healthy place, right? So I bailed out, right? That's it, you know. I don't think I had any followers anyway because I wasn't sure how to do that, how people would find me without them knowing it was me. I hadn't hurdled that one yet. But yeah, just bailed out. So church, we have got to protect our hearts and our minds. Because even talking about things, thinking about things can lead us to a place that does not reflect God's goodness, God's grace. In church, we can be right about something or opinion. Listen, I'm a very opinionated person, so I know what I'm talking about. We can be right about an opinion, but our attitude still be wrong. We got to be careful. Church, I speak from experience. Okay? Amy and I, sometimes we got to stop conversations as we talk about all of you. Oh, you think I'm kidding. We're just like, yeah, this is, you know, we've done enough. We've acknowledged whatever it is, but, you know, we need to pray for them. We need to move on. And you just start talking in circles and you get deeper in the hole or whatever you're in, okay? Let's guard our hearts, church. Surround yourselves with followers of Jesus, right? But in every situation, set your heart and mind upon the Lord, right? Paul says, hey, the peace of God will be with you. If your mind and your heart is set upon the Lord, the peace of God will be with you, right? And the next thing he speaks about here, number three, he talks about strength from the Lord, right? Just a few verses left. In verse 10, Paul says, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. And we talked a little bit about this earlier in this series, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but Paul was acknowledging the help that he received from the church at Philippi. Remember, we talked about care packages? Some, you know, I don't want you to lie, but kind of a little bit. Guys, thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, care packages, right? They sent financial support. They sent support to Paul through Epaphroditus, all right? Which, that would make a great dog name. Just telling you, Epaphroditus. He's thanking them for that, okay? But he's getting ready to teach them something very important here, all right? And there's more to this that I don't want to get into, but he's kind of avoiding a patron-client relationship in the first century that time, which would create some dependency upon Paul. Hey, why don't you guys go down a rabbit hole and read that? That's kind of interesting, right? So he's saying, thank you for the help. It blessed me, but I didn't have to have it. Something very subtle there that he's saying. Okay, he was grateful, but he was careful with his words not to create a relationship of dependency upon the church. So a patron-client relationship. You guys look it up, first century. It'll be fun. Okay, so he's thanking them. But he's saying, I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances, all right? Now this is a good lesson for grass is greener people. Okay, and we recognized earlier that there wasn't anybody. We only had half milk people, I think, right? Or half glass, but this is a good lesson if you're listening online and your grass is greener person. I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. In church, at times I struggle for this because I got a little bit of wanderlust anyway, a little bit of thrill seeker in me. You know, as you get older, it gets a little bit better. But I get a little bit of this sometimes, all right? Paul says, I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. All right, verse 12, he says, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. A lot of you are familiar with verse 13, right? I can do all things through Christ. You're familiar with that. I often see it on athletes' shoes sometimes, Philippians 4, 13. I can do all things. Now, the problem is we want to take that verse and take about half of it and turn it into a fortune cookie. And we want to make it very self-serving, right? I can do all things. And it becomes almost a power of mind over matter. I can do all things, but which is not at all what the verse is saying. Right? We turn it into a Jeremiah 29 situation, right? I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you, give you hope in the future. That was true. That was true for Israel. That had been in captivity for the exact amount of time that he told them they were going to be in captivity for. Okay? But we want to take the prosper and apply that to our lives now in a selfish financial way, which is not at all what that's saying. Okay? I've talked about Jeremiah 29. Where there are still principles we can take, things that still apply. But often we treat Scripture like a holy fortune cookie, right? These are my lucky numbers, okay? You know, And fortune cookies are so deep, right? You're going to meet somebody someday. Okay. Hey, I met Joe, right? I can do all things through Christ, through him who gives me strength. Paul was talking about his situations that he was in when he was persecuted, when he was abandoned, right? When he didn't have any food, when he didn't have any money. That's what Paul is talking about. I can do all things through him. Why? Because I know he's near. Why? Because I go to him in prayer and he gives me peace that passes all understanding. Why? Because my mind are on good things, are on noble things, are on holy things, they're on God things, and God gives me peace. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. This whole passage is about the nearness and the presence of the Lord and what it does for people that follow him and how we should lean into that in prayer. We should lean into that in our thinking. How that should motivate us to reconcile with others in the church. He can do all things through Christ because it is about Christ. It's not about Paul. Right? We've got to take it all together. We can't just take the part that we like. I can do all things. Yay. Listen, I've been trying to regrow a mullet for years. I can't do all things. Right? I could grow a skullet. If I could talk like Sean Connery, that might work, but I can't. Sorry, a lot of you are too young to get that. Half of you, anyway. 80s Sean Connery. That was, you know, make sense? Anybody testify? Thank you. You know what I'm talking about? Hey, Calvin, I thought the ladies would testify about that, but anyway, I guess not. I don't have that accent either. You can do all things. Worship team, you better come up before I start talking gibberish again. But listen, this is a very popular verse, a verse that many of you are familiar with. But church, we've got to keep it in proper focus, right? Proper perspective. In this passage, as Paul is teaching these things to the church by the relationship with one another and the relationship with the Lord, the church, that should be an encouragement to us today. And I asked you at the beginning, if you were a grass is greener person, okay? Some of that may be just how you're wired. That could be, listen, as the situation gets harder, it's like to bail out instead of fight through. Right? So you may need growth in that area. Well, sometimes we get impatient, discontented with our current situation, could be current relationships, right? We're tempted to maybe go a direction that the Lord wouldn't want us to go, right? But this morning, I want to encourage you, just as Paul was trying to encourage and inspire and remind the church there at Philippi, especially as we go into this Christmas season. Listen, guys, Christmas can be distracting, a lot of stuff, and I got to go here, here, and here. I got to buy this, this, and this. The encouragement that Paul gave and the encouragement of Christmas is really that the Lord is near. Okay? That was the promise of Christmas. And if you're here and you say, you know what, I'm struggling with being maybe not completely satisfied with my life right now. Your job, a relationship, whatever it is. We talked about a lot of things. So what would Paul say to you? He'd say, rejoice in the midst of that. And then he would say it again, right? Rejoice. He would say, go to the Lord in prayer with thanksgiving. Peace of God will guard your hearts and your minds. He would say, make sure that you are thinking about the stuff you need to be thinking about. Guard your heart. And the peace of God will do what only the peace of God can do, and that is reassure you of his presence in your life if you're a follower of Jesus. That's what Paul would say to you. So I want to remind you this morning that the Lord is near. Okay? If you're a follower of Jesus, he's very, very near. And even if you're not, I mean, he's waiting for you to commit your life to him. In a church during this season, let's not forget this promise. We're kind of full on into the Christmas season. Let's not forget the promise of the nearness of God, right? Let's commit to pray for those in our lives that don't know Jesus. Let's make sure this is time maybe we refocus. Maybe it takes all the Christmas stuff to help us remember that the Lord is near and recognize that, God, I need to refocus on you. I've let myself get distracted by some things that are not of you. Matthew chapter 1 speaks to this promise of Christmas. And Joseph finds out that Mary's pregnant, and like many of us, if you men, you'd be like, okay, that's not my baby. I'm gonna do something else, right? An angel appears to Joseph, if you know the story, and reassures Joseph It says in Matthew chapter 1, verse 20, it says, she will give birth to a son, speaking of Mary. This is an angel speaking to Joseph. He says, you are to give him the name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. Okay? The most important thing that Jesus was going to do is to provide an avenue of forgiveness and relationship for an entire world that had rejected their Creator. It says, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. It says, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a child, and they will call him Emmanuel, which is God with us. Best promise of Christmas, church. So the Lord is near. Right? And so let's not forget that. Okay? Let's let that reality inform how we treat one another. Let's let that reality inspire us and encourage us to lean into Him. Even when things aren't good, that's the best time to lean into Him. Because often, we just want to bail out, or we want to do something different. Instead of leaning into Jesus, this is what we need to do. Prayer and worship. Listen, I'm going to ask you to stand this morning. We're going to sing a song and worship this morning. We're going to sing a song about the goodness of God. And listen, especially if you don't feel like God is very good this morning, and you're a follower of Jesus, man, this is the best time to sing this. Because you need to refocus, reset your mind, your attentions. And I'm going to ask Frank and Karina to come up over here. Amy and I will be over here with some of our Calvary leaders in the back. But we want to pray for you this morning. If you're like, you know what? It's Christmas. Christmas isn't always easy. I just need to be encouraged this morning. Or anything we talked about in the message. Listen, we want to pray with you. We want to stand with you. That's a privilege of being part of a church. Is that we can stand with one another. We can pray with one another. So let's just worship the Lord wholeheartedly this morning. If we could pray with you guys, let us do that. If you're online, send in a connect card. We'll be praying for you this week. Let's just worship the Lord together this morning.